The Reedy Planning Commission regular meeting now is in session this Thursday, September 5th, 2019, and I have exactly 5 o'clock. Commissioner Conrad, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes. Would you all stand, please? Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And we have the roll call, please.
Here.
Commissioner Custodio.
Commissioner Custodio is excused.
Okay.
Commissioner Rosinia.
Present.
Commissioner Hudson.
Here.
Chair Perez.
Here. Public comment provides an opportunity for members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public within the Commission's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda for this evening. It is the policy of the Commission not to answer questions impromptu. Concerns or complaints will be referred to the Community Development Director's office. Speakers should limit their comments to not more than 3 minutes, no more than 10 minutes per issue will be allowed. For items which are on the agenda this evening, members of the public will be provided an opportunity to address the Commission as each item is brought up for discussion. So our public comment session is now open. If anybody wants to speak on anything other than what's on the agenda, they're welcome to do so now. I see none, so we will close the public comment session. Under a consent agenda, a category a recommended course of action for each item is made. Any commissioner may remove any item from the consent agenda in order to discuss and or change the recommended course of action, and the commission can approve the remainder of the consent agenda. On the consent agenda, we only have one, the minutes of the regular meeting. I'd like to hear a motion to approve or disapprove or change.
I so move.
Second.
I second the motion.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Conrad?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Lucinia?
Abstain.
Chair Perez?
Yes. Public hearing. Item number two, consideration of environmental assessment number 2019-6, investing tentative subdivision map number 6267, the Fino Estates, related to the single-family, multifamily development proposal just south of East Locke Avenue and east of North Frankwood Avenue. Through resolution of 2019-11, staff recommends that the Planning Commission take the following actions. A, adopt the environmental assessment number 2019-6, an addendum to the City of Reedley Certified Program Environmental Impact Report prepared for the Reedley General Plan Update 2030, dated August 2nd, 2019. B, approve the vesting tentative subdivision map number 6267, Fino Estates, authorizing the subdivision of land pursuant to the Subdivision Map Act. So with that, I will turn it over to staff. Mm-hmm. Yep. You're on, Ms. Ellen.
Thank you, Chair, members of the Planning Commission, Ellen Moore, Associate Planner with the Community Development Department. The item before you this evening, the project is located in the northern sector of the city of Reedley. Currently, it consists of two parcels that are about 13.51 gross acres total. Currently on the property, there are two existing single family homes that sit closer to Frankwood Avenue. And then in the eastern half of the project, of the site area, is fallow land and agricultural uses as well. Looking at the general plan, the project is inside the city limits. So as you can see, it is adjacent to the city limits. The red line shown on the screen is the city limit boundary. But the light blue dashed line does show the project area, and it shows that the western half of the property has a high-density residential general plan planned land use designation, and the eastern half shows low-density residential plan land use designation. Low-density residential, as you can see, there the existing subdivisions nearby have that designation, so it's a typical single-family residential neighborhood. In high-density residential, that does include apartment complexes and projects that have multiple dwelling units on one lot. Looking at the zoning, it does reflect what the general plan shows. The western half of the property is zoned as RM-2, which is multifamily residential zone district, and the eastern half is R-1-6, which is one family residential. So because the designations match up with the zoning designation, this area is consistent with the general plan. And I do want to note that this zoning is currently in place right now, so there's no change of zone or general plan amendment proposed as part of this project. The project is already zoned with multifamily and single family on there. Just wanted to clarify that. I have a better picture of the subdivision map on the next slide, but just to summarize, there are 34 single-family lots proposed as a result of the subdivision map, as well as 10 lots for multifamily development, and there's a storm drain basin also identified in at-lot A. Based on the lot dimensions, lot sizes, it is consistent with the Reedley Municipal Code, and the staff report does include the findings that need to be made in order to approve a subdivision, and those are in the staff report, and if there's any specific questions on those, we can go over those, but it includes items such as that the map is consistent with the general plan, and that it's appropriate for the development, has appropriate densities, et cetera, et cetera. So those things are, those findings can be made. So looking a little bit closer at the subdivision map, it is color-coded to show where the single-family lots and where the multifamily development lots are located. The yellow, orangish lots that are outlined with that color, those are the single-family lots proposed. And then the green lots, there are 10 of those. Those are proposed for multifamily development because it lines up with the zoning on there. And then the lot outlined in blue is the storm drain basin that is proposed to serve just this development. So to note, there is access and a new street proposed off of Frankwood Avenue, as you can see here. And then it does connect to Northeast Avenue. And if we go back just a second to these two, the general plan and zoning, it does show that there's a easement shown on the map. So there is actually city infrastructure in there at this time. It's water and sewer that is serving the subdivision to the north. So there were plans originally when the Reedley Estates or Hawthorne Heights subdivision was proposed to the north. There was plans to include public improvements and a future street construction along East Avenue. So this project is conforming with that. So you see Northeast Avenue is shown here. And so it does show that Northeast Avenue is connecting to East Lock Avenue. It is connecting to the existing subdivision to the north. There is also future street right-of-way proposed to bring East Avenue down to the existing subdivision to the south, and then Evergreen Avenue here is proposed to be extended as well. So this the extension of Evergreen and East to the south, that is outside of the project limits, so it is not required as part of this project to be constructed. However, the city is offering a credit if the developer of the single family lots wishes to connect those, but it is not required at this time. But that does show the future plans to connect existing subdivisions and to provide multiple points of access within subdivisions. So there's multiple ways to get out of the subdivision or into the subdivision. So moving on to some of the conditions of approval to note for the vesting tentative subdivision map. Did want to be clear that this project that is before you this evening is only the subdivision of land. We do not have any applications submitted for the multifamily component or apartment complexes, and we do not have any applications for building permits for the single-family homes. So right now, all we're looking at tonight is the subdivision of land. So once the streets are constructed, the single-family homes, all you do is you pull a building permit to construct the homes. So there's no further public noticing required or further site plan review or anything of that nature required for the single-family homes. And for the multifamily development, there is a site plan review that would be required to be submitted to the city. However, that it is a by right use. Apartments or multifamily development is a by right use in that zone district. So there would not be any further public hearings or public noticing for when there may be construction for the apartments. So did just want to clarify that. The subdivision of land does require public hearings, but in the multifamily developments are by right, so they just go through city staff review and approval. And if they meet parking requirements, setbacks, open space requirements, they can move forward with construction by right as allowed in that zone district. So did just want to clarify that. And so the setbacks and everything that I had mentioned, those are included in our municipal code under the R16 and the RM2 zone districts. So whoever comes in to construct either the apartments or the single family homes, they can refer to those code sections to develop. And street improvements, this was already mentioned, but the cross section of South Frankwood Avenue. So from the center line of South Frankwood Avenue to the project area, that would have to be constructed per city standard. It would be similar to what is to the south. So there's a two-way turn lane and a northbound, southbound lane. So that would be included, or that would be constructed within the limits of the project. And then as previously mentioned, the East Avenue and Evergreen Avenue alignment is not required. But if the developer wanted to do that, that amount would be reimbursable or credited, I should say. And then, of course, the residential streets, which is the East Cambria and Northeast Avenue, these would be constructed in their entirety because they are within the limits of the project. Moving on to the environmental assessment for the project. In 2014, the City Council certified the EIR for the Reedley General Plan Update, which is the first map that was shown that included the land use map. So back in 2014, this area was planned for the low density residential and the high density residential land uses. So that was looked at, those impacts to the environment were looked at in the EIR for the general plan. So in order to confirm whether if there are any more significant impacts or new impacts, the staff did an Appendix G checklist that's modified to answer the questions as to whether there would be a substantially new or increased effect on the environment as a result of this project. But staff did determine that the changes being proposed within this vesting tentative subdivision map are minor in the sense that they would not create potentially significant environmental impacts in addition to those already identified in the City of Reedley General Plan Update 2030 EIR. The project would also not substantially increase the magnitude or severity of impacts that were previously identified. So with that, staff prepared an addendum to the EIR for the general plan update to that assess the impacts of this project. For public noticing, it is required at least 10 days prior to the public hearing. So a notice of public hearing was published in the Mid Valley Times on August 22nd, and a notice of public hearing was also sent to property owners on August 22nd, 2019 by mail. With that, staff's recommendation is to adopt environmental assessment number 2019-6, which is the addendum to the City of Reedley certified program EIR, prepared for the general plan. The addendum is dated August 2nd, 2019. And staff's recommendation is to approve vesting tentative subdivision map number 6267, also known as Pheno Estates, authorizing the subdivision of land pursuant to the Subdivision Map Act. And with that, that concludes staff's report. I did want to acknowledge representatives of the project are here in the audience. Lee Fino is representing the property owners, and Aaron Oliver is here from Lane Engineering to answer questions as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. Commissioners, any questions or concerns for staff or our guest?
Oops, there we go.
The only thing that was missing from this report was a dust bowl radar section. We didn't get a good breakdown on the dust factor.
The dust factor?
This is unbelievable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's pretty intense.
It's pretty intense, yeah. and very thorough.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of action was incurred here, so. Mm-hmm.
I'd just like to have the developers or owners speak to the project.
Oh. Does anybody have anything else, any concerns before we move on?
Well, I do have a question.
Oh, please.
With the Lot A, is that developed along with the back portion? Because you said the multifamily isn't... How would you put it?
The basin is for the whole project. So
will it be built in conjunction when they do the single family homes? If that goes ahead of the multi?
Yeah, it would be built depending on whichever comes in first, because the basin would collect drainage.
Okay.
So if the single family portion of the map is built first, then the basin would be built at that time, at least at a minimum, whatever needs to be served or whatever capacity that first phase has, that would need to be dug out in the basin. And then, as everything else comes in, then they would continue to do that. So it would depend on what phase comes in first.
And alternatively, the additional option of that one too is to build out the basin, whichever phase comes in first, to build out the basin to its full capacity. Mm-hmm. And then whoever comes in second reimburses the first person that came in the amount for the fair share of what would have been needed to serve their phase.
Will that be a grass field for kids to play in during the summer, or will it be fenced?
Yeah, so this is not a multi-use basin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this would just be retention basin, and it would have standard fencing around it, and the only time that you would see people inside of it is when city crews are in there doing any type of maintenance in the area.
Okay, commissioners, are we good? Any other questions? If not, what I'm going to do now is open up to public hearing, and we'd like to hear from you folks. If you step up to the podium, and whoever wants to go first.
Okay. Well, I'll just let Mr. Fino speak first as the owner, and I can kind of chime in with any other technicalities as
well,
we're engineers. But
I guess my deal is it needs to be developed from what I see for all the area around it. Working with the city of Reedley, Allen, and Rob there, it's been really great. They've been very helpful, and the things actually come together. It takes a long time, huh? We've been at this for what, over a year? So it's something that, and I didn't realize how much went into developing something like this until I've gone through this process. I probably will never do it again. But that being said, it's more interesting, and I understand a lot more what goes into keeping the city together, and it's great. It really, truly is. Thank both of you, though. It's been, otherwise I probably would have, don't have to thank him, otherwise I would have bailed probably a long time ago. It's, anyway, I'll let Aaron.
Okay, sure. My name is Aaron Oliver. I'm with Lane Engineers. We're out of Tulare, California, address 979 North Blackstone Street. Ellen sort of alluded to this. This project has sort of been in the works for many years now. We actually were involved with that Ridley Estates project just to the north there. I think that was built out 06-ish, 07-ish, I want to say. And actually back then we were involved with that other developer with Lee back then, sort of more peripherally back then. But this had sort of been on the drawing board even way back then. And then, of course, as everybody knows, things sort of slowed down. And so here we are again. I think the only thing that changed now is we have the multiple family component. I don't think it was originally envisioned, but we had the general plan change, of course. And I guess we're seeing a lot more of that. And I think people are sort of encouraging that for people to meet the housing obligations required by the state, put on municipalities. So, yeah, we just think it makes sense. Of course, there's a lot of development around, and it's almost sort of infill in some ways. So that's about it. You know, as far as, analyzing the traffic and stuff like that, we were working with a traffic engineer, and we really assumed a worst-case scenario for that. And I honestly don't think it'll even build out to that sort of density or intensity that the traffic study envisioned. And it's, of course, fully compliant. And I think it's really what the general plan envisions here. It's really fits perfectly. So with that, I'm willing to answer any questions if you have any, to the best of my ability. So
when do you anticipate that you'll start construction?
We've got it listed right now with the agent here in town, and we're hoping that it sells, and he's working with some pretty good sized buyers or developers, and a couple he said that one in particular he said is does both phases. And that's the one he'd like to really,
exactly.
From what he said, they're very reputable people.
That's good.
I've heard of them and I've seen their work. And so, we for the longest time we didn't do anything. We had probably approached several times the development. My mom was still alive. As long as she was alive, it wasn't going to happen. She passed away, and so we've been working, trying to get it finished up.
Mr. Fino, have you done projects in the area like this before?
No, sir.
First time.
I'm learning. No, it's interesting. You learn a lot of patience in life. That's something that you have to learn. But everything fell in place here. The city's, like I said, Alan does a great job. Rob does, and it just all fell in. These guys do a fantastic job. So.
If I could just add one more point to that too, we've been seeing more builders and other developers, home builders, having a desire to have land like this that's all ready to go. I mean, maybe 10 years ago when things were running up, we saw more developers or builders willing to get in and take a raw piece of ground, go through the mapping process. But we're seeing a lot more builders kind of heading this direction, looking to pick something off that's already been entitled like this and then go and build on it. But just because, I mean, what Mr. Fino has done, he's just eliminated a lot of uncertainty for a potential builder, and it's there, and it's more ready to go for someone, and so they can have more accurate prediction as to when they can reasonably start construction. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. If you have nothing else to add.
I think there was a question.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry.
The parcel just to the south, the long strip, is that owned by you also?
No, sir, it's owned by a church.
Oh, okay.
And I believe, Ellen, please correct me if I'm wrong, there was interaction with the property owner there who was not interested in developing at this time.
With the church
property?
Correct.
I think they're still wanting to build a church there, from what I was told.
Yes.
I think that's the apostolic church in town that bought it.
They're interested in developing the church on the Franklin side. And so the back half of the property, or the eastern portion of the property, is owned as single family as well. So potential to sell that off as well.
But they were
additional units, but
they're so far behind in figuring out really what they want to do that they just weren't ready to move on any type of development at this time.
Okay.
What else interested you about Ridley, doing it in Ridley?
Well, I was raised here.
Okay.
And here all my life. And it's a nice community. I look at that area, and this probably, and that's hindsight, should have been done when the other development was done. I don't argue that, but circumstances and things as they happen in life don't work that way. Now we see an opportunity to continue it and take that property and put it into what it should be. And that kind of finishes out that area. Otherwise, you end up with towns with pockets of that don't belong there. And that's so, but like I said, even though we probably could have overruled her, she was still alive, you don't do that. So now, yeah.
Thank you. Understand. Okay. Anything else, folks? Thank you very much, folks. Thank you. Good luck to you folks. Any other concerns from the public that questions? Yes, please. The podium, please, and introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Christy Bartlett. My concern is that the amount of housing that you're trying to put on the area. I don't disagree that having housing, but it's like the density of the housing that you're trying to put there, you're looking at putting, what is it, 130 more families in this very small area, all coming out into, you know, leaving for work or whatever, onto one of only three northward roads that come into Reedley. And my concern is the density and how many people that you're going to be having impacting Franklin Avenue, impacting the school district in that area, impacting the other houses around it. The number of single family homes, besides the ones that look like they have good sized lots, it's like you're almost trying to put two houses per what should be a one house lot size. And the density of the apartments just, it concerns me as somebody who lives in that area, putting in that many more people into, it's not a very big, how many acres is it? 14 acres of land, and you're putting 190 or 130 more families into 14 acres of land. That concerns me. And also, like I said, the traffic concerns me, because you're going to create a lot of, I believe, traffic problems. The North Avenue doesn't dump onto Parlier because of the church land. Most of those people are going to be dumping straight out onto Frankwood, you know, during work hours, during rush hours, and then trying to get by T.L. Reed, that's going to cause some danger. I just believe that's part of my concern. All right?
Thank you, Mrs.
Thank Gordon. You.
Excuse me, ma'am, for the record, would you be willing to give your address for the minute?
North Concord. Is that close enough? Okay.
Thank you. Anybody else, please?
My name is Josue Renteria.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Josue Renteria. Just to piggyback on what Christy said, I live on the corner of Frankwood and Aspen, so it's the last house. And I fear for the traffic as well. I stand in my front yard every single day and watch cars drive out of town on their phones. Every single day as I'm leaving my house, it is one of the most dangerous intersections to drive out on Aspen to Frankwood. And I can promise you that in the next years, if you put a lot of cars coming out, a lot of people, as they're leaving town, they think they're out of town. They're driving 40, 50 miles an hour. And one out of every five cars is looking down in their lap at their phones. So the just her talking about that right now really opens my eyes of all these cars that are going to be pulling out onto Frankwood. It is it's going to be super dangerous as far as cars. The idea, we're both in education, and I know the impact that high density units have on schools. I know for some of the schools in that area, there's a lot of overflows, there's overcrowding. You know, a school like T.O. Reed and Naval Lincha, I think it'll be zoned probably Naval Lincha. They're already busing kids out, a lot of kids out to a far school. And so it puts a lot of stress on the district. It puts a lot of stress on the classroom sizes when some of the other schools in town have more room. So I know just as far as that, as far as the school-wide thing, that concerns me. As far as the overflow, you know, a small school doesn't have enough room to be able to house that many units. I know talking to teachers from other schools when they first built these last ones that are out farther north, I believe it's like Thompson. I know that teachers talked to me about how they noticed their school just like it took a big bump. And the classroom size changed, the teacher-to-student ratio changed. But as far as the traffic, I see it every day. I fear my daughter just got her license, and I'm scared to death of her because every day I watch multiple people leaving that, driving fast, looking down. So that scares me to hear that. Just you said it, all these cars, they're all going to dump out in Frankwood. And so it's really scary. I don't understand why. Is there a reason why there has to be multiple? Is it, you said earlier there's some kind of ordinance that you have to build more?
There's actually state regulation that we have to have a certain amount of land that is assigned to us by the state, X amount of acres, that we have to be able to make sure is zoned appropriately throughout the community that can accommodate a certain population.
I just think it's interesting. Wouldn't it be easier if we're going to put a lot of people and a lot of families really close together, that they would be closer to the schools? Because the kids that are in that area aren't—they're not going to, unless you rezone the school district. It's not going to go to Teal Reed. They'll probably go to Alta. They'll probably go to Great Western. So now you're putting a lot of people in an area that are going to go to a school that's over 2-3 miles away, for kids to be able to walk to school, go to school. It's a dangerous road. I have a huge lot. My kids don't play in the front yard. They're not allowed anywhere near the street. It is, people go in and out of the town so fast, and to put a lot of kids, you know, I grew up in an apartment complex, and the kids aren't going to just be in their little area. They're going to be all around. They're going to be running around. It's a dangerous road. It's very, very dangerous, and to put a lot of families there is very scary for me. I think that's it.
Thank you, Mr. Renteria. Ms. Bartlett, would you like to come up?
I was just going to ask, my voice is loud. Like you said, I'm a teacher.
For the minutes, we still need you to.
Sorry.
The houses that were built off of Frankwood on the other side of town, they were zoned for 4 sets of apartments, correct? And only 2 sets of apartments were built? There are still end caps that are set aside for 2 sets of apartments.
That are zoned multifamily.
That are zoned multifamily for 2 sets of apartments. So why would we not be building the ones that are already, that were already set aside for that purpose?
Right. So just because the city designates something as an allowed use in a certain mm-hmm. area, designates something that can be multifamily, it goes through its zoning process, right? All the environmental that goes along with that does not mean that the private property owner or even a developer is going to develop anything there, right? So always you have the private property ownership rights that are going to come along with that. So if a property owner is not interested in development, it might not develop simply because they're not interested in developing. In the same thread, you might have a private property owner that would say, yeah, we would welcome a developer to come in and develop it, but you might not have a developer that says that makes financial sense for us. So you constantly have those two items going on there. And when it comes to the zoning and the general plan designation, the city does the very best that we can to make sure that we're being open and communicative with the community to identify the type of growth and densities that they would like to see dispersed amongst the community. And then the rest of it really ends up being what the free market is going to decide within the plans that the community says that they would like to see and that has been approved, and within the regulations that are found in the municipal code that have to do with setbacks and lot coverage and all of those items. Totally understand all of the concerns and everything that you guys would bring forward, and I can assure you that through the process, those specifically are absolutely analyzed and are required to be analyzed and are all included within the staff report, including traffic numbers, all of the impacts that can come along with that. Very, very real concern. One of the items that you guys had touched on, we were actually speaking about earlier associated with another project, and that had to do with the overcrowding in the schools. So it's an interesting item because it ends up being, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg. When development happens, the development is required to pay fees to the school district, right?
Right.
In order to obviously fund facilities and the things that are needed. When development doesn't happen, no fees come into the school district, which means that they get to deal with exactly what they have, and they don't have anything additional to try to count on anything. When development does come in, they will pay those additional development impact fees to the school district that has been established through their public process. And then, of course, those fees can assist, obviously, to build new facilities, to expand existing facilities, those type of items. But again, the challenge is always there to make sure that you're, are you going to have enough in the current to support whatever it is that you have? The challenge that they have right now is the overcrowding issue, right? So adding more students in will bring in more funding to be able to assist with that, but it's certainly not going to fix any current challenges that they may already have in place. So that's,
right.
That's going to be a very real concern for any type of development. And while we do get that, we are very active with the school district, as they are right back with us as well, to try to keep coordinated. And they do have the opportunity to see any type of tentative map that comes in for public approval and to comment on it. And we discuss the fees with them and everything of that nature. So they are absolutely aware of this one and you know, had expressed their support for that as well, and their understanding that if approved, here are the type of additional student impacts that could come with that.
Right. The other question that I also was just wondering about is, do we have a demand for, where are the people coming from? Because we're not adding new industry. We're not really adding new businesses. The only thing that I've seen really being added recently is the medical center out over by Save Mart. But where is the demand for, you know, 130 new houses really coming from? Do we have that type of need? Or are we going to be pulling, because this high density housing, is this going to be, are we pulling the type of clientele that we really want in Reedley, or are we creating more Section 8 housing that, you know, really isn't as desirable?
Well, so Section 8 housing is something very, very specific. I mean, we're talking about like an affordable housing type of
right.
That would come in, government-sponsored type of items. Very, very different than market rate, which is what's being discussed here. If you spend time in City Hall and interface with members of the community as often as we do, it's amazing how much of a demand there actually is for people that are already in the community. We have a lot of overcrowding people that are in single-family homes, and you have two, three, sometimes even four generations in one home. We see a lot of it throughout the community, and we're constantly getting feedback that people are asking, when are we going to get new units in town? And Reedley has not seen a significant amount of residential, both multifamily and single-family development. Traditionally, it's kind of come in spurts when it does come for Reedley. Which in many ways is done intentionally, and that's to be conservative, to try to be very mindful of what is needed and not to, oversupply something, because that ends up being much more of a negative than it is a positive. You want to be able to maintain as much of a demand as you can, but we do hear very, very often how much of a need there is for housing, and we are seeing more planning activity for that right now, people preparing. Just like this one right here, being prepared to build those type of units. And what this does here is it creates the subdivision for the development to be plausible. So this is not actually a developer coming in and saying that they want to do this. What they're looking to do is get all of the entitlements and the land use approvals for the subdivision in place, and then a developer could come in and fulfill that demand when they feel that demand is there. So it's a planning process.
And how... how closely would you have to stick with this plan if a developer did decide to come in? Would they be forced to or required to stick with this exact plan, or would there be room for change?
So when you have a tentative map that is approved this way, that would be the map that they would be assuming to build to. They would then go what's called through a final map process. And the final map needs to have relative consistency to the tentative map that was approved. You may see some very minor adjustments that have to do with things like small public improvements or something of that nature, but the map as it is approved tentatively like this, that subdivision map, That's what it's going to have to stick to. And then the regulations associated with the building on each one of those lots that are found in the municipal code, those are the items that they're held to make sure that the standards of building are accomplished.
Yeah, and then the just looking at all possibilities here, there's possibilities for, because you have the 10 lots, the 10 multifamily lots, there's possibilities for lots to merge. So two lots could become one larger lot, but the density requirement would still have to be met no matter what. So there may be chances to add additional units because the average may be, right now, it's about an average of 9 units per lot. So you may be able to merge them and add one or two extras, but you still have to maintain the same density as it would be even with these 10 lots.
Yeah, consistency with what you're seeing. So the street alignments would remain the same. The lot, overall lot configurations would remain the same, even though you could see a merger or something of that nature.
So are we as a city now looking at every time that we build a subdivision or develop for a subdivision that we will also add in high density housing?
No, this was certainly not added in. In fact, in 2014, when we went through the general plan update process in the city, a portion of this geographical area was redesignated as the multifamily. And it was years later that the property owner came in and said they were interested in doing a map. And they simply came to the city and said, here are the designations. We want to design something that's going to fit into what those designations are. They did not ask for any change in any way. They simply asked for what the city standards were, and they met and, in fact, even exceeded many of them.
Okay.
And to add on to that, it's not a requirement to have multifamily, if kind of what you're saying, it doesn't have to be added, but we are getting a lot of push from the state because there's an increase in population throughout the state, so the state is pushing for more housing, for more types of housing, so there is that pressure that also kind of exists, because if a proposal comes in to remove the high density, the city has to put it somewhere else, so requirements to take into account as well.
But this particular map didn't have any of that applying.
Okay.
But yeah, you certainly will see that much more throughout the valley and throughout the state. The state is requiring local agencies to have a lot more land overall designated for multifamily uses.
Okay. I think that's all.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bartlett. Any other comments from the, please?
My name's Ed Besoyan. I live at 1863 Northeast Avenue. There were some comments about if the developer decides to put the streets through Evergreen and East Avenue, how will that be determined? I mean, he's just going to voluntarily do it? And I understand their concerns completely. Punching East Avenue through is a good idea. Not one that I like, but it's a good traffic concern. So how would we be notified if that's going to happen?
Just to clarify the comment, because the East Avenue and Evergreen Avenue portion to the south of this property, it is outside of the limits of the project, so it's not required as part of this subdivision unless the developer wants to move that forward and build it with this subdivision. Otherwise, the church or the property owners, they would have to build it at the time that they develop their lot to the south. So as far as noticing for that extension, the future right-of-way is indicated on this map. So it, as a courtesy, when the street is being built out, the contractor at that time would reach out to the homeowners to let them know of that. But as far as
okay. Another thing that kind of concerns me, and I understand as a developer and a property owner, you want to get as many houses into a project as possible. But these lots are considerably smaller than all the lots that are around this development. So what's going to happen is, I think the people surrounding this development, it's going to drop their property values because you're going to get a lot smaller house of less quality than what's there now.
The lot size difference, I believe the average for this subdivision is, I think it's 7,500, if I remember correctly. The houses to the north are 8,000 and 9,000, I think, and then to the south, I think, is around 9,000 as well. So it is a 1,000 square foot difference for the lot sizes.
I think it's a little bit more than that, and also the ones that are to the east are considerably larger. You could see that by the property line alignments.
Yeah, you do. You have seen over the years that the an average lot size has certainly decreased as costs have gone up. The lot sizes have shrunk a little bit smaller in order to be able to still build homes that people can afford. The average sizes on here are actually larger than we are seeing in the majority of the other maps that come forward. Typically, those are ranging right around the 6,000 square foot mark. Some of them even getting down to 5,000 square feet within the lot. That does fit within the zone district. Here it is designated R16, which means that you have to have that 6,000 square foot average. So it does exceed that one for sure. And oftentimes what we see is even when smaller lot items do come in adjacent to or close to areas that have a larger lot, typically the real estate value that you see, if anything, it actually assists those that have a little more land right now, because the building model is simply moving further and further away from that. And if that is desired, then you will see the real estate value support that a bit more. But it is absolutely a trend that you're seeing all across the board overall in all areas of development, that the lot sizes are becoming a bit smaller and a bit smaller, and densities are going up a bit.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Masoli. Any other comments? If not, I will close the public hearing session of it. And what I'm going to ask of the commissioners is we're going to do A and B. I'm going to combine it. I'm not going to read it again, but it will also be under resolution number 2019-11, covering the environmental assessment and also the tentative subdivision map. I listened for your wishes. I have a motion of some type.
I would move that we approve resolution 2019-11. Is that correct?
Yes.
I'll second that.
Second it? Okay. Call for the question, please.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Lusignan?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, and we look forward to seeing your area grow fast soon. Thank you so much.
Feel free to reach out to either one of us at any time.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Fino.
Thanks. Nice working with you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron. Nice to meet you.
Thank you.
All right.
Before we go on, do we know what percentage, one of the things that popped up in my mind, when we have a subdivision like this grow, do we have a percentage of relocations within our city limits? What percentage would move into that area?
Is that hard to track, or is, you know, because that's one of the possibilities that I would rebuttal, you
sure,
know,
yeah,
in a situation like this.
While we don't have any hard numbers on that one right now, or a study that has recently been done on that to collect any of that type of data, I think that an answer that I could give that at least starts to get at that one would be, recently you had self-help enterprises come in and they were looking to do the first phase of the Reed and Aspen development Reed and Aspen, just north of Parlier. They had 63 units, I believe, in phase one. Is that correct? 60-something. And they already had, that when we had our public meeting, which was their public workshop 2 weeks ago, they already had 35 applicants from the city of Reedley that had approached them and wanted to start entering into the process to build their own self-help home. So, you know, we're talking 50% of those homes. Again, a little different because self-help makes it possible through sweat equity to get into a home to assist with some of that down payment, some of those upfront costs. So, you know, you do have some families that may not be able to get into a home otherwise. But even so, to be able to say 50% of the homes that are coming in there, you already have people with expressed interest that have sat down and started the application process to be able to build there. You know, so I think it would be very safe to say that we will see a certainly noticeable number of people moving simply from Reedley to another area of Reedley, and whether that's moving out of the current home that they're in, and you know, maybe they're a second generation family or something of that nature. In the several areas of town, it is not uncommon for us to see two and three generations of families in one home. That would actually be extremely interesting for a study to do, mm-hmm, in the future, and might really be something that would be very good for us, not only for our local people here to be able to help communicate to them, but I think those would be items that the state would likely be able to hear about as well, and maybe even be able to help us rebut some things that need to be rebutted there.
Exactly, Mike. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
And that's an excellent idea.
Yeah, and the and possibly when we have our census, that would be a good time to ask that question.
They're right into the land use census right now of the 2020. So mm-hmm. I mean that would be an excellent item. And let me dig into those details and see if they have any of the new questionnaires. We've actually been pretty engaged with prepping our community for those activities, and so we're constantly getting information back from them right now about their dates, their rollouts, what they're anticipating. So I'd be happy to look in and see if there's something like that, and if not, maybe that's a great item for us to seek for a planning grant to take mm-hmm. a look at that.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, director's report. Who's going to do that one?
Well, Ellen got to do everything else today.
Okay.
So. I was going to say.
That's right. She did all the hard work.
She did all the heavy work, yeah.
Just a few items wanted to give you guys updates on. First, El Valle down on Dinuba Avenue, they are nearing their final occupancy. So if you look on the outside, everything looks almost completely done. They're just going through their final last hit list items with the building inspector, and then that multifamily development will be up and running.
Is that the one on Dinuba Avenue? That
Dinuba and Hemlock.
Yes,
Hemlock. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
Yep, Almond Grove also, they're continuing to work hard on that one. You will notice that while Frankwood Avenue is for the most part open now, there is still a utility pole that is basically, feels like it's right in the middle of the street, and it's certainly off the side, but still in the right-of-way. The reason why is because that's not owned by the city, and PG&E owns that pole, and PG&E is on their own time when they do anything, and they have been told... I know.
No.
They have been told it could take up to 18 months, right? Now, we hear that all the time, and they're usually out there in a few months, but even so.
I used to think 9 was.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was unacceptable. But you'll notice that there are barricades around that one. That's the reason why it's still there. I'm sure we'll probably see it in a few months come out. But if you do have anybody question, hey, why is that still there? It's because it's owned by PG&E, and we can't touch their. We can't touch their stuff. So
hopefully we can put them to bed pretty soon.
Yeah, well, I'll keep our fingers crossed, right?
Yeah.
Self-help homes, as I mentioned, they had their final map and their subdivision improvement agreement approved by council just in the last couple of weeks, so we'll now be continually working with them to actually get sticks coming up out of the ground. You should see dirt turning there, and I would imagine in the next 6 weeks or so, you'll actually see activity starting to take place on site, and then as they get into the off-site improvements for all of their public improvements to finish out the roads and curb and gutter and underground utilities, all that type of
And what, where
activity.
Is that going to be exactly?
So that's phase one of the Reed and Aspen.
Reed and Aspen, okay.
Yep. And then the Frankwood and South annexation application, that goes to LAFCO tomorrow morning. Ellen will actually be sitting down with LAFCO to go over the submittal of that application there. And I know that I sing her praises all the time, but I just got to say one more time. I hear every single time from an outside agency, whenever something has to be reported to them, submitted to them as an application, coordinated with them in some way, I consistently have those agencies reach out to me and ask, can we use this as the example to other agencies about how stuff needs to come in? And that's all thanks to Ellen. So
I was thinking during this presentation, I'd like to see your template sometime that you've developed.
Yep. She's got it all dialed in. So very obviously very grateful to have her on my team. October 3rd, as you guys can see on the future agenda items there, we are anticipating we'll have a conditional use permit. I want to make sure that the Planning Commission understands that that use does have to do with alcohol sales. So that's not all that it is, but of course that will be part of the discussion. So I just want to make sure that date, we like to have as many of the Planning Commissioners present for those type of discussions because they are typically fairly involved. There's usually a lot of questions and a lot of things that need to be addressed. So if there's a conflict on that tentative date for you guys right now, please let us know as soon as possible. So if there needs to be an adjustment to ensure that there is the activity that we need, that'd be good.
The 3rd?
October 3rd. Yep. And then it is possible that the Farmland Preservation Program workshop that we have tentatively set right now for November 7th might be bumped. That's just simply because we're actually having a little bit of a delay in the contract with the consultant. We have the consultant's insurance provider and the city's insurance provider arguing about whose language is better. They can both agree, your language is great, my language is great, but, you know, it's mine's better. In one language and yours is in another language.
I just hope it's in Spanish.
Right, yeah, that might make it easier at this point. I have to admit, I look at a lot of those, indemnity clauses and all of this, and I read both of them and I think, well, they both basically say the same thing, just in a different way.
Yeah.
Right?
But in Spanish, it is clear.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, dead serious. Anyway, so I wanted to let you guys know, if there seems to be an adjustment on that one, and we're saying, hey, that's not going to happen in November, it might go to December, even January, there's nothing wrong. We're just making sure that we have all of the appropriate coverages and communication taken care of first. We're in good contact with the state. They took almost, 16, 17 months to get us a draft of their contract. They can be patient with us for a couple months as we get our stuff lined up. So no real pressure on that one. It's part of the general plan implementation that we said that we would do. We are absolutely moving forward with it. But if it seems to have a bit of a delay, that's the reason why. Other than that, I don't have any additional updates unless there's any questions about items going on in the community that you guys wanted to bring up.
I just had a quick question on that subdivision map. So like the example, this one's up here, and they do the traffic study. When it comes down to actual local traffic, like they were asking about the speed around it, is that also included in this? Is that something that you can, when does that take, who decides that part, basically?
Yeah, it's very interesting because it's actually a combination of several different items. So when you're taking a look at your general plan designations and what you're going to designate a street as, those streets, if it's a major arterial, then you can anticipate that you're going to have one set of speed limits. If it's a local street, you know that you're going to have a whole different set.
Yeah.
So those items are set by city standard, by the city engineer. Mm-hmm. And then as those are actually put into place, those speed limit signs are put there. Moving forward, if there is safety issues, those items can always be brought forward to the Traffic Safety Committee. And if they feel that there are certain warrants for safety, for traffic flow, for anything of that nature, then those can be overridden by the city engineer and they can place something there. The perfect example we're sitting right next to right now, we have a four-way stop right here on G and 9th now, right? All of the warrants never met for that, and yet there was such safety concerns about people that were pulling on both sides of 9th onto G Street that came to the Traffic Safety Commission, and they elected to make an overriding finding to place that item there. So we always want to make sure that we have the avenues to address those items as needed. And those are real concerns, even though, you know, many, many times, you know, members of the public will come in and say, people are going 100 miles an hour down my road, and you can go out there with a radar gun, and they're going 30 in a 25. The fact is, a place needs to feel safe, right? People need to feel safe where they are. So even though some of the concerns that they bring forward might not be 100% accurate, we always want to make sure that we're being responsive and communicating to them so that they at least understand what the process is. Okay. But that's how it goes. They're preset and then addressed moving forward as needed.
Okay.
PD can also step in on that one as well. If there's a consistent area that's not meeting warrants or safety issues or something, PD can still get out there. And we have several places in town where they go out and they'll have a weekend in a month where they'll give 5, 10, 15 tickets, and it calms down for a good while because people know mm-hmm. they're paying attention there. So it's a long answer, I know. That's a planning answer, so my apologies up front for that.
Commissioners, any other concerns or comments?
Frankwood Avenue, going north.
Yeah.
180 is going to end there. Is that going to make it one of the... I know historically, Reed and Frankwood, Reed has little more traffic, but is that going to add more traffic to Frankwood coming into Reedley?
I think that it certainly will. I think that you will see a difference. I think that a lot of the traffic patterns that people are used to as far as traveling down Reed, it might take some time for that one. But I certainly think that you'll see that adjustment right up front, because now instead of the 180 dumping off at Reed, it will be dumping off at Frankwood. So if they're coming into Reedley, I think that it's just going to be the more natural flow for them to come down. We have anticipated that. And that's the reason why Frankwood is listed as an arterial within the general plan. So we anticipated that, as Reed is also an arterial. So we tried to plan for that as well as we can. We coordinated with Caltrans, made sure when they were going through all of their outreach and everything, they knew exactly how we felt. Believe it or not, that extension of the 180 was approved in 1978.
Right.
I was born in 1978.
Yeah.
And they're building it now. I mean, it just mm-hmm. that blows my mind. But
and
all throughout the process,
they're building it because
it's the very last of the Measure C projects.
So when do they anticipate that to be completed?
It's been pushed back a couple times because of some weather delays. Had a little bit wetter winter than they were really anticipating. But I want to say they're open to traffic date. They were still hoping for late 2020, early 2021. I wouldn't be surprised if it happens a bit earlier. They're making pretty good progress.
They are.
Yeah.
They really are. And even during those rainy days when I used to, because I drive by there all the time, they were out there working.
Yeah, you're still seeing something.
Yeah, something.
And some contractors, man, threat of rain, and they pull everybody off.
Exactly. Quite a bit of activity, right?
Yeah, so I wouldn't be surprised if we see it a little bit earlier. But that was Caltrans. Their initial target date was what they came out with for that.
Okay, anything else, folks? This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners.